It's the Hot Seat with Vinny Fredericks on 104.5 The Team, ESPN Radio.
I took her out. It was a Friday night. I woke alone.
And a happy Sunday morning to everybody out there. Welcome to this Sunday morning edition of the Hot Seat at 10 a.m. today. I know, we'll be back to our 11 o'clock time slot either next week or the week after, but we have got Buffalo Bills football coming up for you at 11 o'clock. Pregame starts, kickoff at 1 as the Bills take on the Denver Broncos in the wild card round of the NFL playoffs. And it is a football-filled weekend that we'll have to recap for you right here on the Hot Seat. It's your host, Vinny Fredericks. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in on this fine Sunday morning. And without further ado, let's get right into it. As I already mentioned, football-filled weekend, so we'll recap it all for you. We'll take a look into the association, check how your local teams in the NBA are doing this weekend. And of course, as always, the hottest headlines around the world of sports and beyond. Excuse me. As we're waking up early this Sunday morning and we're getting right into it. Got college football playoffs, NFL wild card round. It is truly the best time of year to be a football fan as you've got great games everywhere you look. So let's dive right into it, starting with Thursday night, which kicked off the college football playoff semifinals between Notre Dame and Penn State, in which we saw the Notre Dame Fighting Irish get the 27-24 victory over Penn State. And this one, it certainly looked like it was going Penn State's way the entirety of the first half, as they ended up going into the locker room with a 10-3 lead, able to just simply drive down the field with ease every single possession, really ran the ball well. They had 200-plus rushing yards total in this game. Weren't able to overcome some late mistakes, however, as Notre Dame, especially in the second half, really started to turn things up. 24 points scored just in the second half, 17 of those coming in the fourth quarter, as the fourth quarter was really where you saw the bulk of the action. If you were watching this game, the first half was a little bit boring, if you will, as there was not too much action going on. But once the second half started, both these teams, their offenses started firing on all cylinders. Riley Leonard finished the game with 223 yards and a touchdown, two interceptions on the day, however, so he did not look at his absolute best. Neither did Drew Allar, Penn State quarterback, as he finished with only 135 yards and one interception on the day, and that interception coming at the biggest possible moment with about 30 seconds left in the game. The Penn State defense gets the stop they need, force the punt. All they got to do is drive down the field, get a field goal, win the game, or you could play for overtime. It was still a tied game at that point, but Drew Allar, immediately after Penn State gets about a 13-yard rush on first down. So you're thinking, okay, we got a chance here. We're getting some good yards. We got some momentum. Let's keep driving. You know, let's try to get into field goal range, try to go home, and try to get ready for this national championship. Well, Drew Allar had other plans, as on the very second play of that drive, he tries rolling out left, doesn't see anything, ends up throwing back across his body towards the middle of the field instead of just throwing it away or eating the sack. And it would end up in the hands of the Notre Dame Fighting Irish defenders. As from that point on, it only took about 20 yards of offense for the Fighting Irish to get into field goal range. And Mitch Jeter knocks down the 41-yard field goal to win this one for Notre Dame. So a very big mistake from Drew Allar and Penn State. One that it was certainly a big topic of conversation the last few days. And is certainly a moment that Drew Allar will be repeating in his head until next season. But, you know, Penn State, they're not going anywhere. Drew Allar, only 20 years old, but does have 2 years of starting experience in college football. So I'm sure next year will come back better than ever. Nick Singleton, the running back for Penn State, ended the game with 84 yards and 3 touchdowns on the day. Would have been 4, but Drew Allar, on the very first drive, unable to find him wide open, would have walked into the end zone, threw it just a little bit behind him, and Singleton cannot bring it in. Jeremiah Love and Riley Leonard each with a pair of rushing touchdowns as well, excuse me, with one rushing touchdown each on the day. And Jaden Greathouse for Notre Dame had the big 54-yard touchdown reception from the hands of Riley Leonard. And that was the big one in the fourth quarter that tied the game up and set up Notre Dame to then get the stop and the game-winning field goal a couple drives later. So it was a big fourth quarter for Notre Dame, and they will be heading to Atlanta to play in the national championship, where they will take on the Ohio State University Buckeyes after their victory over the Texas Longhorns 28-14. And I tell you what, Texas had a chance to tie this game up late, but this game was really all Buckeyes from beginning to end. You know, Ohio State scores on the very first drive, runs it right down the field. Quinshon Judkins gets the rushing touchdown. And then from there, they held the lead for a long time. The entire end of the first quarter and most of the second quarter, it was 7-0 Buckeyes. And then with about a minute or so, maybe less, left in the second quarter, Texas gets their first points of the day as Quinn Ewers finds Jaden Blue for a touchdown. That was actually how they scored both of their touchdowns, Texas. Quinn Ewers to Jaden Blue, each with two touchdowns on the day. But while the Texas Longhorns did do their job and tie the game up with about 30 seconds left in the first half, it didn't take much for Ohio State to get themselves right back into the lead as Will Howard would find Travion Henderson for a little screen pass that ended up going 75 yards on the first play of the ensuing drive for a touchdown right as the first half was coming to a close. And that would send the Ohio State Buckeyes to the locker room with a 14-7 lead. And that's a huge touchdown, because if you're Texas, you just drove all the way down the field, you tied the game. All right, now you're thinking you can go into the locker room, brand new ball game, it's 0-0. You can start fresh and just play good in the second half, and you're walking into the national championship. And keep in mind, Ohio State received the ball to start the second half. Texas did not seem like they were prepared for Travion Henderson to get the rock on that possession. They were way too focused on Jeremiah Smith and Emeka Egbuka, who really had subtly quiet games. You know, Jeremiah Smith had one reception for 3 yards in this one. So they were doing a good job at keeping an eye on him. Emeka Egbuka finished with 5 receptions, 51 yards, very solid outing. But it was actually Carnell Tate of the Ohio State Buckeyes who was their leading receiver, 7 receptions for 87 yards. And then, of course, Travion Henderson, that one big reception for 75 yards and the touchdown to go alongside his 42 rushing yards on the day. Will Howard would end the game with 289 yards through the air, 1 touchdown, 1 interception, and Quinn Ewers would finish with 283, 2 touchdowns, and 1 interception. But the big play came with about 2 minutes left in this one. Ohio State up 21-14, and who would it be but Jack Sawyer, who would come off the edge on fourth and goal, sack Quinn Ewers, recover the fumble, and from that point on, it was just green grass in front of him. Nobody was catching up to Jack Sawyer, who made himself an Ohio State legend in Friday night's game. With the scoop and score, ran that one back about 85, 90 yards. And this whole play was possible because Texas, with a chance to tie the game, is driving down the field. Big passing plays. They get down the field in about 6-7 plays. And all they have to do is punch it in, and it's a tie game with a couple minutes left in this one. But instead, they get all the way to the goal line, 2nd and goal. And what does Steve Sarkisian call? A pitch play to his running back against the fastest defense in college football. And how did that go? Well, I believe it was to Quintravion Wisner. He ended up getting smoked in the backfield, a loss of about 8 or 9 on the play. Now you're setting up for a 3rd and goal from the 10, and you have to put the ball in the air. Quinn Ewers tries to find his receiver in the corner of the end zone, unable to. Pretty far off. You know, there was a bit of contact between defender and wide receiver. No flag. It was not a very catchable ball anyway. So now you're looking at a 4th and goal. All right, 4th and goal. You got to get into the end zone here. At the very least, don't take a sack or anything. Set up Ohio State with bad field positioning. You still have a couple timeouts. I believe they had 2 timeouts at this point. So you can still get the ball back with 2 minutes left to go in this one, should you not be able to get the score. But not when Jack Sawyer comes off the edge, sacks Quinn Ewers, and takes a scoop and score all the way back for the touchdown. So at that point, the game was pretty much out of reach. Ohio State would be up 28-14, which would be the final in this one. And the icing on the cake was the interception by the Ohio State defense's Caleb Downs. And that would do it in this one. Ohio State off to the national championship just a few short weeks after losing to rival Michigan, and people were calling for Ryan Day's head. He is now about to coach the Ohio State Buckeyes in the national championship. So it's going to be a good matchup between Ohio State and Notre Dame. That game will be January 20th, if I remember correctly. Yeah, Monday, January 20th, 7:30 on ESPN, coming from Atlanta, Georgia, in Mercedes-Benz Stadium. And the line is already out. Ohio State, 9.5-point favorite in this one, which is a pretty wide spread. The other spreads throughout this college football playoff, there were certainly some very wide ones, but I mean, not like this. For just for reference, we'll look at some of these older college football games that you would expect a pretty wide spread. Notre Dame and Indiana. Notre Dame was 6.5-point favorites. Clemson and Texas, in which Texas was the heavy favorite. In this one, Texas had a 13.5-point spread in this one for going in their favor. SMU and Penn State. This spread was 7.5 in favor of Penn State. So some of these early round matchups that wound up being complete blowouts, like Ohio State and Tennessee, Ohio State was only a 7.5-point favorite. Now, granted, this is weeks ago. We hadn't seen any of these teams play in the playoff yet. But for the national championship to be a 9.5-point spread, I mean, it's certainly a number to look at. You know, Ohio State and Oregon, that was only a 2.5-point spread. Ohio State would win that one by 20. Texas and Arizona State, which they only won by 8 points, Texas did. They were 13.5-point favorites in that one. And even look at Notre Dame and Georgia. Notre Dame was only a 1.5-point favorite against Georgia and their backup quarterback. And just, you know, for fun, let's take a look at the semifinal spreads. Penn State was 1.5-point favorites against Notre Dame. They would lose by 3. And in the Ohio State-Texas game, Ohio State was only a 5.5-point favorite. So Notre Dame-Ohio State being at -9.5 for Ohio State, that's, let's see if I can remember what I just read correctly. That was, what, about the 4th or 5th widest spread in this college football playoff, and it's in the national championship. That's certainly a number that a lot of people will point at and say we could have had a better matchup had the playoff format been a little different and included some teams that there's people out there that think deserved a spot in the playoff, you know, whether it be a team like Alabama or Miami or South Carolina. Plenty of other teams out there that people think have a case of being in the playoff this year. This is the cards we were dealt. You know, this is the bracket we got. And we've seen some pretty great games. Notre Dame-Penn State, that was a classic. Ohio State-Texas, you know, up until the last minute, was a one-possession game almost the entire time. Even Texas and Arizona State went to overtime, and Texas really had a good chance at losing that one. So we've seen plenty of good games in this college football playoff. I think they did just fine in this year's selection. And like I said, should be a good one. I'm expecting Notre Dame to cover that spread. I still think Ohio State wins this national championship, but we'll have more of the buildup on that coming up next week as we will be broadcasting hopefully at 11. Or actually, hopefully not at 11 if the Buffalo Bills win this week and play again next Sunday. But I'm sure if the Bills advance to the divisional round, they wouldn't be playing at 1 o'clock anyway. They'd be having a 4:30 or 7 or 8 o'clock kickoff. So most likely, we will be back in our 11 o'clock time slot next Sunday anyway. But we will be going over the preview of that national championship next week. Ohio State, Notre Dame, Atlanta, Georgia, 7:30, ESPN. Moving on to the NFL wild card weekend, as we've already had a couple games played last night, we'll start there. Houston Texans, with probably the biggest upset you will see in the playoffs this year, they would defeat the LA Chargers 32-12. Did not give up a touchdown until the fourth quarter. And you seemed, you know, if you watch the first quarter, this Texans team did not look good at all. Absolutely did not look good whatsoever. They could not get the ball down the field. And the Chargers, well, they looked good. They were having good sustained drives, but they couldn't find ways to get in the end zone, forced to field goals on two straight drives in the first quarter. And from there, you know, I was watching this game thinking, well, they're giving Houston a chance to stay in this one. I mean, you start the game out up 14-0. Okay, you can really go and do some damage and demoralize the other team's bench and kind of get them to defeat themselves before the game is really at its end. Instead, Texans defense with a couple of big stops, Chargers forced to kick field goals, and the second quarter was where things really turned on as the Chargers were able to pin the Houston Texans down at their 1 yard line, and Houston would go on to get their first points of the day on a 99 yard touchdown drive. And it seemed like from there, it was all Houston. You know, they would put up 10 points in the final 6 minutes of the first half, go into the locker room up 10-6. And it was all Houston in the whole second half as they outscored the LA Chargers 22-6. And we get the victory 32-12. CJ Stroud finished the game with 282 yards, one touchdown, one interception. Justin Herbert, 242, one touchdown, four interceptions on the day, which I won't say all were on him. There was certainly, you know, one to his tight end that really should have been caught and ended up completely, you know, getting tipped into the air and intercepted, brought back for close to a pick six. And the drive right before that, Houston had gotten a pick six by the way of, who was it? It was Eric Murray, the safety from Houston, who got the pick six in the third quarter. And then the LA Chargers finally get themselves back on track. They have a great touchdown out throw to Ladd McConkey, who had a stellar game, 9 receptions, 197 yards, and the one touchdown on the day. It was a great play that they were able to connect with him on, Justin Herbert. But they're going to kick the PAT. And at this point, it would have been a 23-13 game. So it would have been a 10-point lead for Houston. And what happens? The Chargers finally able to gain some momentum. And instead, the PAT gets blocked by Houston. And rather than trying to just catch the ball and kneel it and end the play, Cameron Dicker spikes the football onto the ground. It's behind the line of scrimmage. It's a live ball. And that leads to the Houston Texans returning it all the way back for a 2-point conversion. So that takes what would have been a 10-point game, and now you have a 3-point swing. Now all of a sudden the Texans are up 25-12. And even then, Chargers unable to get any sort of stops as Joe Mixon ran all over the Chargers defense in the second half. 106 yards on the day. I believe at least 60 or 70 of those 106 all came in the second half. He had at least 50 in the fourth quarter, if I remember correctly. CJ Stroud also with 42 rushing yards on the day. And it seemed like at the beginning of the game, at least, before they found themselves in a hole, the first quarter, the Chargers were still trying to get the run game going. And once they found themselves down, they sort of abandoned the run. And this is where you saw a lot of these interceptions and empty possessions come for the Chargers. Because at the end of the day, J.K. Dobbins only had 26 yards. Gus Edwards had 22. And that was it. The L.A. Chargers only ran for 50 yards total on the day. And that right there is your real, you know, issue. If you can't run the ball, you can try and throw it all game long. But at some point, this defense is going to figure out and you're going to make a mistake. And we saw that happen with Justin Herbert as he had 4 interceptions on the day, matching his regular season total in just one playoff game. So the LA Chargers, with some high expectations, their season comes to an end. And the Houston Texans, maybe steering the ship in the right direction. Nico Collins finished with 122 yards receiving and a touchdown. And it was overall a great second half for the Houston Texans. And they will go on to play, well, we'll have to wait and see. Because, of course, them being not the lowest seed left in the playoffs, they will go on to either face the Chiefs or the Ravens or the winner of... Yeah, Yeah, unless somehow the Broncos are able to beat the Buffalo Bills coming up here in just a couple hours, then the Broncos would take on the Chiefs and the Texans would face the Ravens. If the Bills do get the victory over the Broncos, which many expect that they will, the Texans will head to Arrowhead to take on the Kansas City Chiefs. And I already mentioned our other winning team from last night, the Baltimore Ravens, who got the win over their divisional rival Pittsburgh Steelers, 28-14 the final. And this one was, it looks much closer on the scoreboard than I think it really was. I mean, Baltimore came into this game as a 9.5-point favorite, I'm pretty sure, which was the widest spread of the playoffs. Ironic, it's also the same spread as the Ohio State-Notre Dame National Championship. But besides the point, Baltimore gets the victory 28-14, and they were up 21-0 going into halftime. So you had this sense that there really wasn't much life coming out of the Pittsburgh Steelers in the second half here. But they did pour it on a little bit, 14 points. All of their 14 points scored in the third quarter. They were down by only a touchdown at one point until the Baltimore Ravens would put the ball in the end zone again to go up 28-14. And from there, you could kind of see that the wind was knocked out of the Pittsburgh Steelers, and there was really no coming back from that one. Unable to really get the ground game going. That was the big difference maker here. Pittsburgh ran for 29 yards total, 17 of which coming from Najee Harris on only 6 carries. So they only ran the ball 11 times total in this game. And I understand they were down very early on, but you can't just abandon the run as soon as you start losing the game. There's still so much time left, and you're already abandoning the run. And that was the difference maker, because they ran the ball 11 times for 29 yards. The Baltimore Ravens, they ran the ball 50 times for 299 yards. 186 of those coming behind the legs of Derrick Henry, who had 26 carries for 186 of those yards and 2 touchdowns on the day. Lamar Jackson had 81 yards on the ground. A couple, you know, chunk plays from Steven Sims with a 15-yard rush. Justice Hill had 12 yards on the day. Even Mark Andrews with 5 rushing yards. Lamar Jackson still put in 175 yards through the air and 2 touchdowns. Russell Wilson would have 270 and 2 touchdowns on the day. Not terrible in the box score, but, you know, this Pittsburgh Steelers team was just simply outmatched, and a lot of people expected this, especially if they can't handle the run from Derrick Henry. You're not going to beat the Baltimore Ravens. And geez, 299 yards, franchise record in rushing yards for the Baltimore Ravens, and one of the most rushing yards given up, definitely the most rushing yards given up by the Pittsburgh Steelers in their postseason career. It's the first time a team has given up that many rushing yards since the 2012 or 2013 Green Bay Packers, who gave up around 320, if I remember correctly. So Baltimore Ravens absolutely dominant on the ground, won the line of scrimmage, and that was the real key in this one, especially without your starting wide receiver one in Zay Flowers. You got to find other ways to get the ball down the field, and when you have the likes of Derrick Henry in your backfield, it's pretty easy to move the chains every 4 downs. So Baltimore Ravens with a pretty dominant effort in this one, as they will go on to face, as I mentioned, either the Buffalo Bills, should the Buffalo Bills get the victory today, not the Kansas City Chiefs. They would play the Houston Texans if the Broncos are able to get the victory today against the Buffalo Bills. And we'll preview those other wild card weekend games now before we get to a break here. Again, welcome into the hot seat with your host, Vinny Fredericks. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in on this early Sunday morning. Should be back at 11 a.m. next week. Even if the Buffalo Bills win, they shouldn't be playing at 1 o'clock again in the divisional round. So most likely the hot seat will be back 11 a.m. next week. But these other football games today, we got a lot of good football in store, starting with Broncos Bills at 1 o'clock. And like I said, you can hear that right here on 104.5 The Team, pregame starting at 11 a.m. Kickoff at 1. You can also watch on CBS and Paramount Plus. As there's breaking news, the Patriots have reached a multi-year agreement with former player Mike Vrabel to become their next head coach. Vrabel played 8 seasons with the Patriots, won 3 Super Bowl titles, had 606 tackles, 48 sacks, 11 interceptions, 10 career receptions, which were all touchdowns, was named to the Patriots 2000s All-Decade Team, named to the Patriots 50th Anniversary Team, and inducted into the Patriots Hall of Fame. Vrabel is now the 7th individual to become the head coach for a franchise he once helped win a Super Bowl as a player, joining Gerard Mayo, Bart Starr, Forrest Gregg, Art Shell, Jeff Saturday, and former Cowboy coach Jason Garrett. So there's no word yet on what exactly the contract looks like, but we know that it is a multi-year deal, and Mike Vrabel was actually the Titans head coach when the Patriots were eliminated in 2019, officially marking the end of the Tom Brady era. And now we will see a new era potentially beginning in New England with Mike Vrabel as head coach. And I think that's a great pickup for him. You know, I think Mike Vrabel, aside from Ben Johnson, those two were without doubt the hottest commodities on the coaching market, if you will. They were certainly the top two on everyone's board. And now we're going to start to see that domino effect of, okay, Vrabel's off the board, everyone's going to pivot to Ben Johnson. And then all of a sudden, Ben Johnson will be off the board. And now everyone's going to pivot to an Aaron Glenn or a Kellen Moore or a Pete Carroll or whoever else is out there. You know, there's plenty of other Mike McCarthy if the Cowboys don't bring him back. So there's going to be a lot happening with this NFL coaching carousel over the next few days here. But the first major domino has fallen with Mike Vrabel accepting a multi-year deal with the New England Patriots. All right, real quick, let's go over these Sunday games across the NFL. Starting with Broncos-Bills. Bills 8.5-point favorites in Buffalo. I'm going to take the Bills in this one to win and cover the spread, but don't be surprised if the Broncos play them pretty tough. If Bo Nix is out there playing loose and playing free and really, you know, leaning on the run game to set up some of those deeper play action bombs, I think the Broncos will certainly have a good game out there against Buffalo. But the Buffalo Bills with Josh Allen at quarterback, you got to do a lot to defeat that team. And I'm not sure a rookie quarterback in their first career postseason game is going to be able to get the job done. Expect a good one, but I'm going to take the Buffalo Bills to win at home in this one against Denver. At 4:30 on Fox, we've got Packers at Eagles in Philadelphia. Philadelphia 5.5-point favorite in this one. Both teams with some pretty beat up quarterbacks. Obviously, Jalen Hurts will be playing his first game in over a month after clearing concussion protocol. Jordan Love and the Green Bay Packers, he's been dealing with a bit of a right elbow issue since getting injured in Week 18 in that loss against the Bears. So, you especially on his throwing arm, you don't know how that, they say he's fine, he's going to play, but you don't know how it might affect him. You know, he might make one throw that feels a little off, and now we're right back to square one. So, this one's certainly a tough one to call because both teams are going to be leaning heavy on their run game with Saquon Barkley for the Eagles and Josh Jacobs with Green Bay. We also don't know what the status is of A.J. Brown. I'm sure he's expected to play, but he's also been dealing with an injury this week. Wasn't able to practice too much. So will these guys, even if they do play, they won't be 100%. They haven't practiced, you know, hard in that long. Will that affect them in this wild card matchup? I'm going to take the Philadelphia Eagles to win this one because, especially we were talking about injuries, Christian Watson being out for the Packers is a big blow. That really limits their offense. It takes away the deep shot. They don't have that deep speed threat that you can send on a fly route and sling the ball up 40 yards and have him beat his defender for an easy catch. They don't have that anymore in the Green Bay offense without Christian Watson. And of course, you still have Jaden Reed, Tucker Kraft, Dontavian Wicks, but they don't have that same lightning speed that Christian Watson has. And I think we're going to see that affect this Packers offense. So I'm going to take the Philadelphia Eagles to win this one and advance on to the next round. At 8:00 tonight, Sunday Night Football on NBC/Peacock, it is the Washington Commanders traveling to Tampa to take on the Buccaneers. Tampa Bay, a 3-point favorite in this one. Baker Mayfield, Jaden Daniels, this is going to be a good game. It's certainly not the most exciting of games because I don't think anyone expects either one of these teams to be making it to the Super Bowl, but should still be a competitive matchup as I don't believe these teams played week one of the NFL season. The Buccaneers got that victory 37-20, but I'm sure Jaden Daniels has learned a lot in 18 weeks of football since week one. So I would expect the Buccaneers to see a different version of Jaden Daniels than they did in the NFL season debut. I'm going to take, and this is a real tough call here, I'm going to take the Washington Commanders to win on the road. I know. I feel like there has to be at least another upset. Obviously, Houston was a big upset against the LA Chargers, but I don't know. This Buccaneers team, as good as they are, they're in because they won their division. And listen, Baker Mayfield is certainly playing as good as all the other top quarterbacks in the NFL. I don't know if I can see them taking down the Washington Commanders. I think especially after that week one loss to Tampa Bay, the Commanders have a little extra chip on their shoulder in this matchup. I think Jaden Daniels comes out and he simply wants to dominate. And I don't know. Like I said, this is a real tough game to call. This one's going to be very well played, fairly even. You could say the Buccaneers are going to win, and I'd 100% believe you. You know, this is a real coin flip matchup. I'm going to go with the Commanders because that's what my gut is telling me. And I have to at least predict one upset. Obviously, I did not predict the Texans to defeat the Chargers. And you will see I am not going to pick an upset in the Monday night game, which is the Vikings not traveling to LA. This game was relocated to Glendale, Arizona, of course, with the horrible wildfires going on in Los Angeles. So our thoughts and prayers out to the Los Angeles community and all those affected by those fires out there. The Vikings and Rams will play in Glendale, Arizona, home of the Arizona Cardinals and State Farm Stadium. So I was still taking the Vikings anyway, even if this game was played in LA. I still see the Vikings getting the victory in Arizona against the Rams. Listen, this Rams offense is prolific. Okay, Matt Stafford is certainly one of the best QBs in the playoffs, a Super Bowl champion. Puka Nacua, Cooper Kupp, Kyren Williams, that offense is stacked. But the Vikings defense is also very stacked, and not in the way that they have a couple of star players. This Vikings defense is loaded from top to bottom. You know, they work together as one big cohesive unit and aren't focused on star players getting all the spotlight and all the shine. This Vikings defense is just simply a well-oiled machine that works well together. And I think they'll have no problem at least limiting Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua and Kyren Williams and Matt Stafford and that whole LA Rams offense. I think they'll have no problem containing them and at least limiting the damage. And if Sam Darnold plays at least a little bit better than he did against the Lions. He did not play very good against the Lions at all in week 18. But I think that's exactly what he needed. He needed to see what a bad game for him looked like so he knows what mistakes not to make. And I think he's going to come out with a fire under him and try to prove to everybody that this season was not a fluke. Try to show the whole world that he is a top quarterback now. And this wasn't just a lucky season for Sam Darnold and the Vikings. So give me Minnesota to get the victory in this one in Arizona, Vikings, Rams. And if all that were to play out the way I expect, we would end up seeing the Washington Commanders, should they beat the Buccaneers, they would be the lowest reigning seed. They would go on to take on the Detroit Lions in Detroit. And we would then have the Vikings facing the Philadelphia Eagles in Philadelphia in the divisional round. Now, of course, this could all change. If the Packers were to upset the Eagles, they would take on the Lions as the lowest remaining seed. If the Buccaneers beat the Commanders, then we would see the Buccaneers taking on whoever doesn't face the Lions. Because if the Buccaneers advance, they're the 3 seed. Only if the Eagles also were to then beat the Packers, Buccaneers would end up facing the Eagles in that case, and the winner of the Rams-Vikings game would be taking on the Detroit Lions. So a lot still could change here. A lot of matchups still yet to be made, and we will see. It's already looking like it's going to be a great NFL playoffs just based off these first couple of games. Not necessarily the closest games, but I mean, you look at that Texans-Chargers game, at least we're getting upsets. We're getting things we don't expect. And we're seeing domination. All right, when we come back, we will dive into the NBA. We'll check out how your local teams are doing. We'll maybe talk a little bit about the Jimmy Butler situation and my Miami Heat, because I've got some thoughts on that. So stay tuned. More of the Hot Seat coming up next with your host, Vinny Fredericks, right here, 104.5 The Team, ESPN Radio. Vinny Fredericks here from the Hot Seat, letting you know to download the free, that's right, the free 104.5 The Team app on the App Store today to be up to date with when our shows are going on, when the Hot Seat is happening every Sunday morning, and when the rest of our programming updates come out, as you will be able to listen to our shows live from your phone anytime you want. So be sure to go to the App Store, download the free 104.5 The Team app today.
It's the Hot Seat with Vinny Fredericks on 104.5 The Team, ESPN Radio.
Gotta get that. Gotta get that. Gotta get that. Gotta get that. Yep, 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 yep. Boom, boom, boom. Gotta get that. 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 Boom, boom, boom.
And we are back here on the Hot Seat with your host, Vinny Fredericks. Getting up bright and early this Sunday morning, leading you right into Buffalo Bills football at 11 a.m. Pregame starts, 1 p.m. kickoff. We just covered all of those wild card round games with my official predictions, and of course covered the college football playoffs. So a lot of great football this weekend. It's a football-filled weekend, but there's still some basketball being played as well. Can't forget that as we'll make sure that we get our little theme music going on here. If we're going to talk basketball, we got to do it right. And we'll start off with Friday night as we look at the games across the association. We'll start with our local products. Milwaukee Bucks and Andre Jackson Jr. get the three-point victory over the Orlando Magic, as Andre Jackson would not score, but he is still starting. Had a few rebounds, five rebounds to be exact, one assist on the day. As Andre Jackson, you know, he's not out there to really put the ball in the basket. He's out there for his lengthy wing stature and his defensive ability and his pure athleticism. So Andre Jackson Jr., the star out of Albany Academy, still starting for the Milwaukee Bucks in the NBA. And speaking of our local products, Kevin Huerter and his Sacramento Kings would go on to defeat the Boston Celtics. Huerter, not the best shooting night, only finished with 2 points and three steals on the night as well, which is an impressive stat. But the Sacramento Kings would get the victory over the Celtics behind Domantas Sabonis's 23 points and 28 rebounds. He was one of two players on the Sacramento Kings to have double-digit rebounds. Trey Lyles, the other, had 11 on the day coming off the bench. But Sabonis with the 20-20 game, 23 and 28, three assists to go with that as well, and one block. DeMar DeRozan would finish with 24 points and nine assists. Malik Monk, 22 points and eight assists, as the Sacramento Kings without De'Aaron Fox able to get the victory over arguably the NBA's best team, not record wise, but you go based off last season and the title favorites, Boston Celtics certainly up there. Sacramento with a big victory as far as momentum shift and, you know, confidence building. If you can beat the Celtics, you can beat pretty much anybody in the NBA. As it was a down night for Tatum, only 15 points, but did also contribute with 12 rebounds and 5 assists. 8 turnovers on the night, though, for Tatum. So certainly a bad night for him across the board. 22 points and 10 rebounds and 2 blocks from Kristaps Porzingis. Jaylen Brown would finish with 28 points and 5 assists. Jrue Holiday and Derek White struggled from the field, each scoring 5 points for Jrue, 3 points for Derek White, as he was 0 for 6 from deep, 1 for 8 on the day. And not too much coming from the bench either. Jaden Springer finished with 9. Sam Hauser with 7. Luke Kornet with 6. So the Celtics just simply with an off night. And, you know, that happens in the NBA. Teams have bad nights. Ball isn't going in the basket. You know, your shots just simply aren't falling. These things happen. If you're a Celtics fan, I certainly wouldn't be hitting the panic button over one January loss to the Sacramento Kings. I mean, it's still very early in the season. Not really much to be concerned about there. Celtics will get back on track, I'm sure. But the Sacramento Kings, nonetheless, with an impressive victory over one of the best in the NBA. The Oklahoma City Thunder facing the New York Knicks for the second time this week, this time in Madison Square Garden. The New York Knicks not coming off of a back-to-back. it didn't really make a difference, as the Oklahoma City Thunder actually won this one even more decisively, 126-101, the 25-point victory for the Thunder. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander would finish with 39 points on the day, 3 rebounds, a couple of assists, a couple of steals, and a block. Isaiah Joe off the bench would also have 31 points, 2 assists on the day. I was looking at this box score. I was like, let's see, Jalen Williams only had 19. Hartenstein only had 6. Where did all this other scoring come from? Lugans Dor only had 6. Cason Wallace with 6. Oh, there it is. Isaiah Joe with 31 off the bench. Maybe Tibbs can learn a thing or two about using his bench, which he did actually use his bench a lot in this game. But it was just a rough outing for the New York Knicks, not named Karl-Anthony Towns and Jalen Brunson. I mean, well, and Josh Hart. Josh Hart finished with 16 points and 13 boards. Jalen Brunson with 27 on the day, 5 assists to go with that. Cat, 23 points, 10 rebounds, 1 steal, 1 assist. But you look at the other two starters, OG Anunoby and Mikal Bridges. Whew, 0 for 12 combined from deep. Mikal Bridges went 0 for 9 from the field, finished with 0 points. A donut from Mikal Bridges, and OG Anunoby would only finish with 4 points. Shot 0 for 5 from deep, 2 for 8 from the field. So kind of just like the Boston Celtics in that loss to the Kings, a couple of bad shooting nights from some starting players, and all of a sudden your team doesn't really have a chance in this one. And I certainly thought that the Knicks would play much better than they did earlier on in the week when they traveled to Oklahoma City to take on the Thunder. Obviously, in that one, I figured OKC, New York traveling. Of course, you know, the New York Knicks are going to struggle on that one. But this time, they were at home. They had a night of rest. They didn't play a back-to-back or anything. And they ended up losing even worse than they did before. They shot 12% from deep, 4 for 31. My goodness, yeah. And OKC shot 50% from deep. Isaiah Joe alone, 8 for 11. So that tells you the story right there. Just simply a poor shooting night for the New York Knicks as they would fall to the Oklahoma City Thunder. Not really much else going on Friday night in the NBA. The Brooklyn Nets lost to the Denver Nuggets 124-105. Not really too surprised there. Keon Johnson finished with 22. Ben Simmons with 10 points, 7 assists. Nick Claxton, 10 points, 6 rebounds. Noah Clowney, 14 points. Tyrese Martin, 19 off the bench. I mean, a pretty well spread out, a well spread out box score. You know, plenty of guys in double digits. Let's see, their whole starting five scored double digits, 2 off the bench. So you have 7 players in double digits for the Brooklyn Nets, but they were unable to handle Nikola Jokic and Russell Westbrook, who both finished with a pair of triple doubles, 35, 15 assists and 12 rebounds for Joker, 25 points, 11 rebounds and 10 assists for the Brody Russell Westbrook. And of course, 17 from Michael Porter Jr., 11 from Christian Brown. The Denver Nuggets simply playing like a well-oiled machine. They get the victory over the Brooklyn Nets. We'll look at Saturday night. Just to throw it out there, my Miami Heat got the 119-98 victory over the Portland Trail Blazers. Tyler Hero with 32 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, playing at an all-star level so far this season. And no other locally based games around the association last night, as the Suns would beat the Jazz, the Pistons would beat the Raptors, the Grizzlies would beat the Timberwolves 127-125 in a tight one. Former New York Knick Dante DiVincenzo had a solid outing for the Timberwolves, 27 points, 10 rebounds, and 7 assists on the day for Dante, as Anthony Edwards struggled from the field, only scoring 15 points on 4 of 13 shooting. Jaden McDaniels with 21, Julius Randle with 18. And wow, Rudy Gobert only had 4 rebounds on the day and 12 points. Certainly a interesting stat line for Rudy Gobert there. And of course, a few games postponed due to the wildfires in Los Angeles. Lakers and Clippers had their games postponed, and even Rockets Hawks postponed in Atlanta due to severe weather and hazardous icy conditions. So we'll see when those games end up getting played. But coming up tonight, or today, I should say, around the NBA, Bucks take on the Knicks in Madison Square Garden at 3 o'clock. The Nuggets would take on the Mavericks at 3 as well in Dallas. Sacramento Kings and Kevin Huerter travel to Chicago to take on the Chicago Bulls at 3:30. The New Orleans Pelicans will be heading to TD Garden to take on the Boston Celtics. Wow, Boston 14.5-point favorites there. And not much else locally. The Nets take on the Jazz in Utah. We'll see. I mean, that's actually a game that the Nets could potentially win, but still the underdogs in that one. Hornets, Suns, Thunder, Wizards, Sixers, Magic, and Pacers, Cavaliers will round out your NBA slate, as that will do it for the Across the Association check-in on the hardwood and your teams around the NBA locally here in the Capital Region. When we come back, you know what time it is. It is about that time where we dive into the hottest headlines of the week around the world of sports and beyond. So stay tuned. More of The Hot Seat coming up next with your host, Vinny Fredericks, right here on 104.5 The Team ESPN Radio. Vinny Fredericks from The Hot Seat here. And if you want to be up to date with when episodes are going to come out, when it's going to be live on air on 104.5 The Team, and if you want to see clippings and snippets of interviews and other on-air moments from my time here with 104.5 The Team, follow my social media accounts at VFreds Media, at VFREDDS Media on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and more to stay up to date on everything and all things Hot Seat and more.
It's The Hot Seat with Vinny Fredericks on 104.5 The Team ESPN Radio.
And welcome back to the final segment here of The Hot Seat with your host, Vinny Fredericks, on this fine Sunday morning. She'll be back at 11 a.m. next week, but for today, we've got Buffalo Bills football coming up in just about 10 minutes. The pregame show starting, and we'll have kickoff for you at 1 o'clock, so don't go anywhere. Tune in, Buffalo Bills football right here on the home of the Buffalo Bills, 104.5 The Team. Before we get to that, you know what time it is. It's The Hot Seat, and we got to dive into the hottest headlines of the week around the world of sports and beyond. And we start with the ice, with a little bit of hockey news. As you guys know, I'm not the most well-versed when it comes to hockey. I'm no expert, but I try to follow here and there. And one name that I do actually know, that being Alex Ovechkin, the 39-year-old Russian for the, Canadiens, or... Yeah, see, this is where you're really starting to see my NHL knowledge, as I forget in the moments which team Alex Ovechkin plays for, the Capitals. Yeah, Capitals. I knew I had it there. It was on the tip of my tongue. I knew it started with a C. Just, you know, I had to make sure I got that correct for you. Alex Ovechkin is now 21 goals shy of tying another hockey player whose name I know, Wayne Gretzky's hallowed career record for goals scored, after scoring in the Washington Capitals' 4-1 victory over the Nashville Predators just last night. Ovechkin blocked a shot and went the length of the ice to set up his 873rd career goal in that one, with an empty netter with about 59 seconds left to seal the win. He also added an assist in this one. Ovechkin, who, as I said, 39, entered the season 42 goals short of breaking Gretzky's career record of 894. And Ovechkin, the Russian, in his 20th NHL season, was on pace to get to 895 and break the record in February before breaking his left leg in a shin-on-shin collision back in November. He missed 16 games from that, but resumed his pursuit after the Christmas break. For the Capitals on Saturday, Ethan Frank got his first NHL goal. Tom Wilson and Andrew Mangiapane were responsible for the other two goals. And the goalie Logan Thompson stopped 32 shots as the Capitals won for the second time in three games. We'll have to follow Ovechkin here in the Capitals as we see if he can draw any closer to Wayne Gretzky's goal career record. And if he doesn't get it this season, we'll see if maybe Ovechkin plays one more year to get that accolade in his resume. Moving on to some college football news, as we talked college football playoffs earlier. Quarterback Carson Beck, former Georgia product, has decided not to enter the NFL draft like he previously declared back on December 28th. Instead, Carson Beck has committed to the University of Miami, according to his Instagram, Go Canes, as he likes to say. His commitment comes within 24 hours of his surprise decision to enter the NCAA transfer portal on Thursday. And Beck will now join Miami for his final season of eligibility. Beck, who was a two-year starter for the Georgia Bulldogs, had a 24-3 career record and will now succeed Heisman Trophy finalist Cam Ward, who is heading to the NFL draft, and attempt to lead Miami into the college football playoff after the Hurricanes came up short this season. As Carson Beck, it of course, you know, is well known that his girlfriend Hannah Cavender plays basketball for the University of Miami, and I'm sure that that has some sort of, you know, some sort of factor in his decision-making process. So Carson Beck, who got injured towards the end of this season with a elbow injury in the SEC championship, he underwent surgery December 23rd to repair the UCL in his throwing elbow and will now be ready to go around March. March, he should be able to start throwing again, and received feedback that he could be selected anywhere between the first and third round in the eventual NFL draft when he decides to go. So Carson Beck headed to the U in Miami to officially become their new starting quarterback. As we move on, sticking with college here, Cooper Flagg, the freshman for Duke basketball, scores an ACC freshman record 42 points in Duke win. Cooper Flagg, obviously well known across the college basketball world, one of the consensus number one overall pick projection in this next NBA draft. As the 6'9" Flagg scored 42 points to set an ACC freshman single game record, helping number four Duke beat Notre Dame 86-78 just last night. It was a performance that put the preseason AP All-American alongside some prominent names in the history of the Blue Blood program and its longtime league home. Flagg just went on to say, "I was just out there playing," which sounds about right. So he broke the record set by Oliver Hanlon from Boston College back in 2013. Harrison Barnes had 40 with the old record in 2011 with UNC. Tyler Hansborough also scored 40 for UNC back in 2006. Josh Okogie and Skip Weiss for Georgia Tech and Clemson in 2016 and 1974 also had 38 and were close to that record. So now Cooper Flagg, officially the highest scoring freshman in ACC basketball history, as the Duke Blue Devils, of course, one of the favorites to go very far in this year's March Madness tournament. Speaking of college basketball, number one Tennessee loses its first game and falls to number eight, my Florida Gators, as Elijah Martin would score 18 points and Denzel Aberdeen added 16 off the bench, as number eight Florida absolutely shut down the top-ranked Tennessee Volunteers 73-43 this past Tuesday night to knock off the last unbeaten team in men's Division I basketball. So, don't sleep on my Florida Gators. They're looking very good this season. Their only loss coming the game before this Tennessee matchup, in which they gave up 106 points and lost 106-100 to the Kentucky Wildcats in a game where Kentucky was just hitting every single shot. So my Florida Gators looking pretty good, as just like Duke, a team that may go very far in this year's March Madness tournament. All right, finally, we'll end it off on some local news here, as all-star reliever of the Philadelphia Phillies has now agreed to a three-year, $33 million contract with the Toronto Blue Jays, the team that initially drafted him. Who am I talking about? The former Shaker High School grad, Jeff Hoffman. Right before his 32nd birthday, he has officially signed with the Toronto Blue Jays on a three-year, $33 million deal. Hoffman went 3-3 this past season with a 2.17 ERA and 10 saves for the NL East champion Philadelphia Phillies, earning his first All-Star selection in July, in which he set career bests for ERA, saves, and appearances. The right-hander struck out 89 throughout the season, walked 16 in 66 and one-third innings, holding opposing hitters to a 197 batting average, before becoming a free agent. And he will now head to a AL East rival of our New York Yankees and our Boston Red Sox here around the Capital Region, as we will see plenty of Jeff Hoffman pitching for the Toronto Blue Jays next MLB season. That'll do it for us here on the Hot Seat. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to this Sunday edition. We got Buffalo Bills football coming up just in a couple minutes here, so stay tuned for that. We'll be back at it next week, probably at 11 a.m., be on the lookout for any notifications if we do put up a show tweet that it is at 10 a.m. So we will have to wait and see what the schedule looks like for the next week's NFL divisional round schedule. But we'll be back at it next week either way at 10 or 11, most likely 11, here on the Hot Seat, home of the hottest takes, the hottest topics, and the hottest headlines around the world of sports and beyond with your host, Vinny Fredericks. Have a good day, everybody. Thank you for listening. This is 104.5 The Team, ESPN Radio. Vinny Fredericks here from the Hot Seat, just wanting to say thank you. Thank you for being a listener. Thank you for supporting the podcast. Or if you're listening live on 104.5 The Team every Sunday morning from 11 a.m. till 12 noon, we appreciate it very much here. And it's because of listeners like you that I continue to do this and follow my dreams. So thank you again for listening and for being a supporter of the Hot Seat and 104.5 The Team ESPN Radio. Be on the lookout for new episodes throughout the week and for the live airings every Sunday morning on 104.5 The Team.